utopiapdx2017@gmail.com. Again, that's utopiapdx2017@gmail.com. Would love to hear from anyone who's from Melanesia in particular.
Cool. And any social media things?
Lillian's going to handle that pretty soon.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Coming soon. All right. I think that is going to do it for our show. Mahlo, thank you so much for being here. This is amazing. This is huge.
Great conversation.
Thank you, Jake. Thank you, Kent.
So our next show is going to be on the 26th, which is three Fridays from now. It's going to be at 11 a.m. I would be lying to you all if I said we knew what we were going to be talking about yet, but it's gonna be good. Thank you all. This show is produced by all of us in Pacific Underground. We are a collective of six now. Jake Vermas and myself, Kanan Schlesinger, are the producers here today. Once again, we've been talking to Mahlo, and we will catch you all next time. Thanks.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 10 o'clock a.m., and it's time for Valley Views, right after this.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Rocker T and the 7th Street Band on Saturday, January 6th, beginning at 9 p.m. at Mississippi Studios in Portland. Rocker T is from Brooklyn and has seven albums released by a number of labels playing reggae and reggaeton. Also performing will be local artist Aaron Nigel Smith, Heavy City, and DJ Kansaman. Again, that's Rocker T and the 7th Street Band on Saturday, January 6th, 9 p.m. at Mississippi Studios, 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And as previously mentioned, Valley Views is next. This week featuring Richard Heinberg, senior fellow with Post Carbon Institute, discussing his article, Are We Doomed? Let's talk.
Hi, I'm Dale Holliday, coming to you from Corvallis, Oregon, in the bountiful Willamette Valley. Welcome to my show, Valley Views, a forum for sharing relevant topics relating to people and issues in the Willamette region. Hi, folks. I'd like to introduce Richard Heinberg, senior fellow with the Post Carbon Institute located here in Corvallis, Oregon. Richard is a man with numerous irons in the fire, so I truly appreciate his taking the time for this interview. Welcome, Richard.
Good to be with you, Dale.
Thank you. Before we talk about your article that absolutely captivated me, would you mind telling folks what the Post Carbon Institute is all about?
Sure. Post Carbon Institute is a nonprofit think tank that explores all the issues related to our transition away from reliance on fossil fuels. And we see that as the the key feature of our lives at this point in history. I guess you could say it's our number one job for the 21st century is to get off of fossil fuels.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. Well, you're a person with so many accomplishments, but today I'd like to focus on your July 2017 article called Are We Doomed? Let's Have a Talk. So despite the dire tone of this article, I was delighted to see it because I thought finally someone is saying things that I've thought for many years now. Someone's telling the truth. So if you can bear with me, I'd like to front load this interview by being very transparent about my personal perspectives. My belief is that the existence of human beings is coming to an end. We had our chance on this planet and we blew it. There are too many vast and irreversible environmental and social problems that will be our demise, especially since so many people are in denial and there's not enough political will to address these problems. I also see our planet as being in a hospice stage, and the best we can do is try to make the patient as comfortable as possible during the last days. And I know that's a bummer of a statement. You know, it is not a cheery thought, and I'm not suggesting that you share my perspective, but your article touched on elements of this belief of mine, and I just wanted to get it out there so you know where I'm coming from. So with that said, I'd like to dig into the article a little bit with you, and can we start with your concept of overshoot?
Right. Yeah, well, the article basically makes the argument that most environmentalists are framing our big problem as climate change, and I agree that climate change is the biggest environmental challenge we've ever faced as a species. But I argue in the article that this is an unhelpful way of framing the situation, because if we frame it just in terms of climate change, then we could come up with all sorts of technical solutions to that wouldn't actually address the underlying dilemma that we're facing, of which climate change is just a manifestation. Mm-hmm. And that underlying dilemma I describe as overshoot. In other words, we've over the last couple of centuries, on the basis of massive amounts of cheap energy from fossil fuels, we have grown our population and our consumption rates and our expectations far beyond what the Earth can absorb or sustain. We've grown our consumption in such a way that it creates wastes like carbon dioxide that's causing climate change, but it also is resulting in depletion of resources like topsoil and fresh water. Mm-hmm. And it's also resulting in human beings expanding into the habitat of other organisms. So it's causing the demise of millions of other species. And unless you see the interrelatedness of all of these problems, it's difficult to propose any actions that would actually have a systemic effect. Uh-huh. You know, most of what we're doing is playing whack-a-mole. You know, we're trying to come up with less noxious pesticides and ways of farming that aren't quite as damaging to the landscape, and energy sources that aren't as polluting as coal and so on. Uh-huh. But these are short-term fixes at best until we address the underlying problem. That we are, reproducing too fast and chewing up too many of Earth's resources and too much space on the planet, and that's overshoot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well put. And just to back up a little bit too. I mean, when you say we need a holistic approach, I definitely agree with that. I mean, my background is in environmental planning and urban planning. I have a doctorate in environmental planning from University of Washington. So I'm not, I've seen the science on this, and but rarely have I seen any holistic approach such as what you're talking about, and it's that whack-a-mole concept. It's that whack-a-mole result from it. So when you say living, well, I'll just call it living small. I don't even know where to begin with that, because it seems as if in our society here, we're rewarded with large things. I mean, if the bigger the better. There's still that concept that the large car, the large house, the large footprint in general. And personally, I like a small footprint. I like a small house. Just like to use public transportation. Will not live in a place that doesn't have public transportation, although I have a small car and I use that for things. But how do you, if you have hope for people, how do you even start to, get some of those systemic changes happening. Is that what your institute is about?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's not just that we like big things. Mm-hmm. It's that we insist upon never-ending economic growth.
Yes.
You know, however much we're using now, however large our throughput and our footprint is today, we want it to be larger next year. You know, mm-hmm. we want more jobs. Of course, that's a good thing. Everybody wants more and better jobs for themselves and their kids and, mm-hmm. and so on. But, you know, where does this end? At what point do we say enough is enough? Is there some point at which we say, okay, this level of consumption is sufficient? Mm-hmm. And nobody, no economist that I know of, no politician has suggested that there is such a point. And without that kind of goal, then we're basically a kind of cancer cell on the earth. Mm-hmm. You know, the humanity is acting like a metastasizing cancer. Now, it doesn't have to be this way. Human societies in the past didn't necessarily expect continuous growth in either population or consumption rates. Again, it's all of this is pretty new. It's a largely a result of massive energy influx from fossil fuels over the course of the 20th century. You know, we adjusted our whole economic system to require continuous growth. We invented the advertising industry to talk people into wanting more stuff. We invented things like planned obsolescence so that consumer products would wear out as fast as possible so that we'd have to, you know, purchase more of them. And again, it was all about creating more jobs, more profits, more government revenues mm-hmm. for more government services. All of these things seem really good, and every politician encourages us to want more of them. But you know, we live on a finite planet. It's a finite, bounded sphere that we live on, and nothing grows forever on a finite sphere. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I love the planned obsolescence. I had to snicker a little bit because I see that every day. I do remember when I was growing up, it seemed that an appliance like a refrigerator would kind of last your lifetime, or
right.
washers or dryers or whatnot, and now they're just so easily replaceable. Or it's a manufactured need. You know, you must have this year's model, or this is a different color, or a different. You know, they change maybe a little bit of the design, and then you know, put it out there for people to consume. And I will say this: I'm in your Corvallis office right now, taping this, and I'm loving this poster. There's a poster of an elephant. A huge white elephant with a little for sale sign on it, on him, and there's a couple standing next to it, and the caption says, "If you don't need it, don't buy it." So.
Yeah. Well, we know, last year we did a project at Post Carbon Institute called Our Renewable Future. It was mm-hmm. it was published as a book, and you can find on. The contents of it for free on the web. And it's basically an exploration of, you know, could we power modern industrial societies entirely with solar and wind? And if so, what would that entail? So we looked not just at, you know, how many solar panels would we need, how many wind turbines would we need. We looked at how we use energy. And a lot of the ways we use energy is not in the form of electricity, which is what solar and wind produce, but in the mm-hmm. form of liquid or gaseous or solid fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas. And it would be hard in many cases to change how we use energy to fit these new energy sources. And some of the particular challenges we noticed were, for example, in making concrete, the main ingredient of which is cement. And cement is made in kilns at about 1500 degrees centigrade. Huh. And nobody makes cement using electricity or solar power because it would be much more expensive than right. doing it with natural gas or coal. Mm-hmm. And same thing with aviation, big problem. But when we got to communications technologies, smartphones, you know, could you make a smartphone without fossil fuels? We were just stumped. You know, it's every step of the way, from resource extraction to shipping these things around the world for various assembly processes,
right,
to some of the ingredients in making a cell phone are themselves forms of fossil fuels or, mm-hmm, you know, petrochemicals of various kinds. So the best solution we could come up with is, okay, when you're 18, you get your smartphone, and then for the rest of your life, you repair it or update, mm-hmm, it, and that's it. You know, which is exactly the opposite of how it works today, where you're encouraged to get a new model basically every 18 months.
Absolutely.
Or so.
Yes.
Or else you're ancient history.
Join me next week for part two of a conversation with Richard Heinberg, Senior Fellow with the Post-Carbon Institute. You've been listening to Valley Views. I'm your host, Dale Holliday, and I'd love to hear from you. Comments, questions, ideas for future topics, or other matters you'd like explored. Email me at valleyviews@kboo.org. That's valleyviews@kboo.org. I look forward to being with you again next time. And remember, as Doctor Who once said, I'm not in charge, but I'm full of ideas. Bye.
Have you heard?
KBOO hosts beloved community in action movie nights every third Thursday at 7 p.m. here at the radio station. In January, we'll show the movie The Mask You Live In, a documentary that follows boys and young men as they struggle to stay true to themselves while negotiating America's narrow definition of masculinity. Again, that's a screening of The Mask You Live In for the KBOO Beloved Community in Action Movie Night on Thursday, January 18th at 7 p.m.